Moving on within our discussion, etiology, is there an overlap between Alzheimer's disease, type 2 diabetes, and obesity? And what is the overlap? So who wants to explain this?
Well, we covered it a little bit already. I mean, type 2 diabetes and obesity, inflammation, cardiovascular disease, for example, high sensitive CRP brings them together, the atherosclerosis. So yes, I think indeed that there is a large overlap in those three diseases. Chronic diseases, patients live longer and longer. So our patients with type 2 diabetes and obesity, they live longer, and then there is this overlap in dementia also. So
lipids, we know that APOE4 is the most common genetic variant to give an increased risk of Alzheimer's disease. So there's also quite, I guess it's not very well understood exactly what does that mean. Is it because the plasma membrane of the neurons are dysfunctional, like, but there's definitely a lipid angle that's also in the spectrum of diabetes and obesity.
Okay. Will the neglect of the complication in diabetes change with possible future approval of repurposing of semaglutide to halt the progression of Alzheimer's disease?
But so one of the most encouraging things, I think, is these new reports on cognitive function in people. That, I think, is very important. And it seems overall that there is an improvement. It's been nicely shown in the REWIND studies where this was looked at specifically. And I mean, given that this is, that the Alzheimer's problem is also contained in this thing, the cognitive impairment, then I think it's you know, it's really encouraging. It makes you think that this might really work. We still have to know the molecular details here, but it's encouraging.
Mm-hmm. But obviously we need the data, right?
Yeah.
We need the trials to finish, and we need 2,600 patients in there.
For a long period, that's the problem, you could say. I mean, with diabetes, it's much easier. You can take half a year, see the effect on glucose, insulin. Mm. Here, due to the slow progression of dementia and Alzheimer's disease, indeed, you need a longer time. So, and I've actually, since this has been out in the public, I would say every second week or once a month, I get an email from, because I have been within the field of GLP-1 for a long time, I get an email. There is an unmet need out there from patients who have family members that are suffering from dementia and say, well, can I start? Should I start? So there is really an unmet need out there. So, I mean, Novo Nordisk should really speed up this process. It's difficult, though.
Returning to the thing we just discussed, I mean, the fact that a major company is doing this now, I mean, that wouldn't have been done 10 years ago. Nobody would have said, this is not possible. This is too expensive. We can't do this. But now it's done, and it's fantastic. It's really wonderful. So I'm personally extremely grateful for this trial because this is really interesting.
Yeah.
I think we feel that we're being welcomed to the field, right? We've had a bit of learning in how to communicate what GLP-1 might be doing and getting our vocabulary right. But I think we feel welcomed to the field, and many investigators actually think that it is interesting that someone is coming with something new. No, I think at Novo Nordisk we have really a strong confidence in our ability to do large outcome-like trials, and I think we have that coming maybe with a fresh eye into this field. So we're hopeful, but we do need more, many more patients.
And I think it's important, with all the knowledge we have about GLP-1, that I really believe you won't harm the patients. So it's also, and if you have beneficial results, then it's a winner, isn't it?
Yeah.
So yes, it's risky to set up such a large trial with many patients, but I mean,
it's not risky for the
no,
patient.
No, exactly,
right?
It's not risky for the patient.
It's only
risky for Novo Nordisk, and that's of course also why family members contact us as healthcare providers to you know, get this tool, which
it's reminiscent of the situation when FDA demanded these cardiovascular outcome trials on all new diabetes agents in 2009, I believe it was. So now we are in a new situation. What about Alzheimer's? And so now this is going to be our new outcome trial for Alzheimer's disease. So and, you know, everybody said in 2009, this is awful. This is terrible that they're doing this. This is a waste of time and money. It was not. It turned out to change the entire picture and understanding of cardiovascular disease and how it could be treated. And I hope that the same will happen with the Alzheimer trial.
You mentioned already that this is really a huge challenge in Alzheimer's disease. If you want to show disease modification, you have to wait for a long time. What would you expect regarding semaglutide? Until when does the group that is treated and the placebo group starts to diverge?
No, that's for you.
God, that is a difficult question.
Again, a very difficult question, I know.
We don't know, but we can look at what happened with the cardiovascular data, because there we actually saw a separation that was really, really early. Again, coming back to what you mentioned, let's not forget about atherosclerosis and the vasculature, but because the outcome data where we see an effect both on stroke, AMI, and cardiovascular death, that kind of speaks to that an underlying effect on atherosclerosis could be behind this. And we do see a clear early separation. So obviously, we hope that again with this mechanism where we have many things that have been involved is that we could actually start to see an early separation. But I have to be honest and say we have absolutely no clue, right?
But you probably need a while, because from the Pioneer 6 trial with oral semaglutide only being 15 months, you were not quite there, whereas with the Sustained 6, it's different trials and different populations, but in the Sustained 6, with injectable sema, which was 2 years, predefined to be 2 years, more hard endpoints turned up. So you probably need some years, but I mean, what do I know about Alzheimer's? Not much, but I think you would need a couple of years to have at least a significant effect.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe it's more a question to you.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's push it back when we can answer.
Because I mean, the clearly the trial is long enough to show a separation, but you know, your mind, what would be the ideal length of a trial in AD?
Yeah, it depends on the starting point. I mean, it depends on where the individual patient stands within the Alzheimer's continuum. What we know today is that for prevention trials, we really need up to 4 years of treatment until the both groups might have a chance to divide. This is different regarding more pronounced stages of the disease, but then you have the difficulty that probably the dynamic of the disease is also already that strong that you cannot interfere with the disease anymore. And this is the field where we are moving back and forward. So either we are too late, then we cannot slow down the progression anymore, or we are too early, and then we have to wait for a long, long time until the mechanism takes action.
And the VOC trials actually will focus on this early AD, so MCI or early dementia. So maybe that is exactly the window.
MCI means stage 3 of Alzheimer's disease, and mild dementia would be stage 4. If you do a secondary prevention trial, or which is closely located to primary prevention, you would move on to stage 2. But this is clearly where most of the clinical trials today are situated, in this early phase of symptomatic Alzheimer's disease, where patients already recognize that they have memory problems, that they have orientation problems, and so on. So this is the classical view. Yeah.